The night may be long and the dark may be deep, but the answers are there to be found. Whether it's the normal, the abnormal, or the paranormal, you're in the right place. Let's go beyond reality.
Good evening, good morning, welcome everyone. It's Beyond Reality Radio. I'm JV Johnson. Welcome to the program. Why when I turn the microphone on, all of a sudden there's a, I don't know if it's a fruit fly or it's something floating in my eye. I don't know, but welcome to the show. We have a very, very interesting show for you tonight, in many, many ways, in fact. And I'm going to get into some of those ways. But we're going to be talking about 9/11, the attacks of 9/11. There are a lot of people who believe and present a lot of evidence, some of it compelling, that the 9/11 attacks, particularly the destruction of the World Trade Center buildings, the two towers plus seven World Trade Center, were actually demolitions, not as a result of planes crashing into those two towers. We all remember, if we were alive 18 years ago, what we were doing when we heard about those planes hitting the World Trade Center towers. In fact, my mother was an operator for Verizon. I think it may even have been 9X at the time. I don't remember when they changed their name. And she was on station, and her area code of service was the World Trade Center area code. I guess it's 212. And all of a sudden, her station got flooded with people calling to get information about reaching people in those towers. And they would say they'd be hysterical. And my mother's telling me this, that that a plane hit the tower and they needed to get a hold of somebody. So a few minutes after that started, she actually called me. I was working at the radio station I owned at the time. Well, one of the ones I owned. And she told me what had happened, that a plane hit the tower. And of course, like everybody else, you hear that and you think, oh, a Cessna clipped the side of a building. We've seen that before. And it wasn't until that second plane hit and that news spread that everybody realized what was going on. Nearly 3,000 people died that day on the attacks in the World Trade Center, the field in Pennsylvania, and, of course, the attack on the Pentagon. Prior to that, other than the Civil War, Pearl Harbor had been the deadliest day from any type of enemy action in U.S. history, and 2,996 people. Excuse me, 2,403 people died at Pearl Harbor. So this figure of 2,996 deaths plus 6,000 injuries exceeded that by a significant margin. It really set a tone that we still are experiencing today. It changed everything that day. I remember what I was doing. I remember as soon as that second plane hit, the radio station I was at, we turned on a television, and then we just sat and watched in disbelief as the events unfolded throughout the day. But one of the results, if you can look at things in some kind of a positive light of that day, was that afterward, the country came together. I mean, we know today how divided we are. And we weren't quite as divided prior to September 11th, 2001, but we were a divided nation at that point. There was a lot of political turmoil and civil turmoil. And that event made us come together as a nation. And then we worked together as a nation to try to make sure this never happened again. It only took a few years after that event that we started to fracture again. I guess that's the nature of a democracy. But in addition to that, some theories started to surface about these attacks and whether or not we were being told the truth. And many, many people still believe we are not being told the truth. One of the people that disputes some of those ideas is a gentleman by the name of Eddie Current. And Eddie is going to be our guest tonight. And one of the interesting things about Eddie is that I have a personal story about Eddie that I'm going to share later in the program. And it's one of those things that if we were talking about a different topic on this program that we've talked about before, this conversation, my familiarity with Eddie Current, could actually be part of that discussion. And it'll all make sense. I'm going to tell you what this is in the second hour of the program. But in the meantime, we've got a lot of great stuff coming up later in the week. By the way, I just got back from Canada. I feel like I haven't slept. Loved the folks in Edmonton. What a great group of people. I was at a convention there. And I have to say, throughout my entire travels throughout Canada over the last 5 days, I've never met a kinder, more humble group of people in my life. I was really, really impressed. Props to you, Canada. You guys are some wonderful people. I had a great time. Partied a little, of course, but that's the Canadian way, right? Tomorrow night, we've got Rich Newman joining the program. He is an author. We're going to be talking about many of his books that focus on ghost hunting, including The Ghost Hunter's Field Guide, Ghost Hunting for Beginners, and Ghosts of the Civil War. And then Thursday night, Carissa Hartley will be with us. Carissa's a psychic medium. We're going to be talking about what it's like to be in that line of work and the things that she's done. So a lot of great conversations coming up the rest of this week on Beyond Reality Radio. This is going to be a bit of a controversial topic. I'm sure it's going to create some emotional responses from people. We will take your calls in the second hour of the show if you have questions or comments. We want everyone to remain respectful, of course, and understand that this is just a conversation of ideas. You know, Eddie is going to present his perspective, but no one completely knows the truth. And let us understand that this is just a discussion. And it's when we can't have the discussion and people get so angry about the discussion that, you know, we cease to eliminate the exchange of ideas and therefore we're just intellectually dead. And we don't want to do that. And we certainly don't do that here on this program. So Jason's off tonight, obviously, and I will be here looking forward to hanging out with you. Please stop by my Facebook page, just JV Johnson, or you can find me at JVJ Paranormal on Facebook. Give that a like. If you happen to be watching on the YouTube stream, welcome. That is just JV Johnson on YouTube. If you want to join us there, there's a great chat room there. There's also a great chat room on the Beyond Reality Radio app. It's all underway, and we're going to bring Eddie Current into the program and begin this conversation in just a few moments after the break. It's Beyond Reality Radio. I'm JV Johnson. Please support the program. Go to patreon.com/Johaw. That's J-O-H-A-W.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So somebody asked me to go to Edmonton, Alberta in Canada. I'm not sure if you know where that is. It's north of Calgary. If you drew a straight line down from Edmonton, you'd end up in Montana somewhere. And trying to find a flight. Now, I live in Cooperstown, New York. Trying to find a flight from the closest airport, which is Albany, to Edmonton was like you'd think I was going to the North Pole. It was almost impossible. So what I ended up doing, because this song reminds me of that, is I drove almost 6 hours and to Toronto and got a direct flight from Toronto to Edmonton, which that part was fine. However, when I was driving to Toronto, I got involved in a lake effect snowstorm, which made that almost 6 hour trip into an 8 hour trip. Flew to Edmonton, had a great time in Edmonton, flew back yesterday, and then had to drive that 6 hour trip home. So my voice is a little rough, my eyes are a little bleary, but I'm here and I'm excited to have a terrific discussion tonight on the program with our next guest. Eddie Current is a YouTube video maker. He also calls himself a 9/11 debunker, but he's so much more. Eddie, welcome to the program. It is an honor to have you on our show tonight.
Oh, I was going to say it's an honor to be here.
I've kind of hinted at the fact you and I have a bit of a history, and I'm going to go into that in the second hour of the show, because I think it's, if you know, we talk about paranormal things on this program often, and we talk about synchronicities on this program often, and I think the two of you and I have kind of touched the surface of both of those worlds with our personal relationship, which we'll get into. But tell me a little bit more about you, because saying that you're a 9/11 debunker and you're a YouTube video maker doesn't even scratch the surface of the things that you've done.
Well, it's one of the things that interests me, and I think on a day-to-day basis these days, you know, when I pick up the computer, I tend to check out what's going on my YouTube channel and see what people are saying about my videos.
But you've also... Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know what else you want to know about me. I do have some other interests, but that's what I'm here to talk about today.
Well, you've been in publishing. You've written some books. You are a musician. I saw something on your Facebook page today, which made me chuckle. Something about redneck engineering. You created a little device that allowed you to use a pitching machine a little more effectively. I mean, you've got your hands in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, well, I like to think of myself as a tinker, and I bought a piece of property, and I wanted to learn how to catch fly balls, but I'm all by myself, so I needed to think of a way to feed a baseball into a pitching machine from a distance by pulling a string. And it took a little bit of doing, but I put together a system that works pretty well.
Well, it's showing a lot of ingenuity there. All right, so tonight we're going to be talking about 9/11 conspiracies. And there are a lot of people that take this really, really seriously and passionately. And we certainly respect those people. There are some people that do it a bit fraudulently. We don't give them as much respect, for sure. But when did this whole idea that you wanted to start looking into this and maybe even dispelling some of these conspiracy ideas, when did that get your attention, and when did you start doing that?
I would guess that, like most people, you know, we saw the World Trade Center get attacked and the Twin Towers collapsing, and we just kind of accepted that planes hit the buildings and there was a huge fire, and the combination of the fire and the structural damage caused them to collapse. But I don't know, I think it was maybe 2007, 2008, and that's around the time when the 9/11 truth movement really started to get going. I don't know where it was, but I saw something about Building 7, 7 World Trade Center, which some people call the Third Tower. And that also collapsed due to fire. It was 47 stories tall, so not quite half the height of the Twin Towers, but really up there. And I read a web page explaining why this couldn't have happened because of fire, according to a mechanical engineer or something of that sort. And I got very, very interested in the physics of perhaps why this building didn't collapse. And for a number of days, I don't know, maybe a week or two, I started to kind of follow, as many people do, the trail that took, and you know, found myself in discussion forums, listening to people who are very convinced that the whole thing, including the Twin Towers, was some kind of inside job. And I got very interested, but then I started to notice some intellectual dishonesty that was going on. And it wasn't too long before I started to realize that this wasn't really my cup of tea. But at the same time, I was learning so much about this building and finding out the actual engineering explanation of what happened, which is really quite interesting. And I started to fight back a little bit. I suppose I suffered a little bit of guilt that I was kind of drawn into it, and I would say suckered into it in a way, because there is a lot of intellectual dishonesty. And I made one video in 2011 on the 10th anniversary explaining how Building 7 actually did collapse, and I've since updated that video last year, a much better version, and it's currently, I believe, it's my most viewed video in terms of views per week. That's kind of where I stand, and I've done some other videos also about 9/11 in both a comedy vein and a serious vein.
Yeah, that 7 World Trade Center video that you did has about 305,000 views. I mean, it's a pretty significantly watched video. And we're going to get into exactly what that is. As you were starting to debunk some of these things and present counter arguments to them, and actually scientifically based arguments to them, were you getting some ire? Were you getting some angry reactions from those folks?
Yeah, definitely. I would say even today, the number one comment on my videos is some form of "you're an a-hole shill." You know, why don't you just go die? People are not too polite, but you know, as you said in your introduction, there's a wide range, and some people are very serious about it. Some people are quite knowledgeable about it, but in my experience, I would say about 75%, maybe 90% are people who just kind of repeat what they've heard, and they don't think about it very much, and they don't follow certain things to see where they lead. And and things like that.
We've got about a minute before we have to jump to break here. Do you find as a whole, and maybe it's impossible to generalize, that this group of people who present these arguments, and as you said, many of them are just echo chambers for what other people have said, do you find that they're less interested in the truth than they are in just proving what their particular idea is or their stance on this?
Yeah, certainly. Absolutely. I mean, I can't say yes enough. They're cherry pickers. They look for certain evidence that supports their beliefs, and they just ignore everything else. Now, in fairness, they would say the same thing about me, but I've kind of been around the bend, as I said, or around the block, and I've kind of seen things from both sides. I feel like I have a slightly better perspective on that.
And what could the gain possibly be if they're trying to convince folks that their version of events is the accurate one, but there's evidence that disputes that? What do they have to gain? Are they looking for YouTube fame? What is it?
I think that to a great extent, it's just investment. The amount of time that they've invested and the deeper that they get into it and the more they convince themselves that they're right. For some people, it becomes very difficult to turn around and say, you know what, I've been wrong all this time. I think it takes a certain kind of strength. Fortunately, like I said, I was only into it for a week or two, so it didn't require all that much strength for me to have. But I think, you know, if you've been doing this for a year or 5 years or more, it's really hard to say that you made a mistake and wasted all this time.
Swing by the YouTube page. Click the subscribe link on that page. We're working hard to build those numbers. It's just youtube.com/C/JV Johnson. A lot of great stuff there, including versions of this program that include some video and stuff. So you'll enjoy that. Tonight, our guest is Eddie Current. He is a YouTube video maker and also a 9/11 debunker. He is joining the program, and we're talking about particularly the World Trade Center buildings. And there are some people who argue that those buildings were not destroyed as the result of two planes piloted by terrorists crashing into them, but instead they were precise and deliberate demolitions. And Eddie, once again, thanks for being here. Let's go through some of the more notorious conspiracy theories about what happened on that day in September of 2001.
Well, it usually starts with Israel. if you want to say notorious, usually has something to do with Israel orchestrating the attack. And Larry Silverstein, who was the leaseholder of the Twin Towers and owner of Building 7. I may have that wrong, but they often implicate him in being a part of this and making a lot of insurance money out of it. So, you know, it touches on your usual anti-Semitic tropes. Those are also that the New York Fire Department was in on it, because there's an awful lot of eyewitness testimony from firefighters that kind of does not support the demolition theory. So some of the really more notorious claims are that the NYPD sacrificed their own, the FDNY sacrificed their own in allowing 130, some of them, to die in this disaster.
You know, it's really, really difficult to think that anybody could be so, I guess evil is the word, to allow 3,000 people, nearly 3,000 people, to meet such a horrible fate for insurance money. I mean, I know there are bad people in the world, but even that alone is a very, very difficult pill to swallow.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
These theories that started to surface that the official account of events was not the accurate account of events, when did they start to surface?
I think there was a book in 2003, or maybe it was 2002, written by a French author, and it was in French, and I think maybe it was translated. I'm not really sure how English-speaking people got a hold of it, but really, you could argue that it started on September 11th, because, you know, there are a few audio clips of, for example, Dan Rather. When 7 World Trade Center collapsed, they showed, and this is 5:20 in the evening, they showed video of it, and Dan Rather said, you know, it looks exactly like those buildings that are intentionally imploded by, demolished by implosion. And I think that kind of grabbed some people, and, you know, you hear them repeat the Dan Rather quote even today, although, you know, he was just describing what something looked like. And quite frankly, a lot of these theories are based on what the things very superficially look like, and people kind of take that idea and go and run and try to confirm that what they think that they saw is actually what they saw.
You call a lot of these folks conspiracy believers instead of what I guess the common term would be is conspiracy theorists. Why do you do
That's
that?
That's correct.
Yeah, why do you do it that way?
Because they never have a theory, for one thing. You know, you could say that the moon landing hoaxers are conspiracy theorists because, you know, they talk about Stanley Kubrick. And certainly, if you go back to JFK, and the grassy knoll, you know, there are actual conspiracy theories of what actually happened to JFK, which is not the single shooter theory. But when it comes to 9/11, you know, they kind of vaguely say that it was demolition, but they can't explain so many things, like how 3 busy working office buildings were rigged for demolition, which, you know, takes weeks or months, and these would be even 7 World Trade Center alone, which is 47 stories tall, would be 50% bigger than the tallest building ever demolished, which is 30 stories. And then you're talking about the Twin Towers at 110 stories and the amount of work that it would take to wire up the thing. And then it didn't make any noise. I mean, you know, if you watch a video of any demolition in the world, it's bang, 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 just as the thing is falling. And there was no such thing in the World Trade Center. So I don't know how I started this.
Yeah, well, these folks who claim that this was a work of demolition and that charges were planted throughout the building in some fashion to make them fall, all 3 of these buildings that we're talking about, who do they claim did it? Who planted these charges? And I know we talked about a few ideas, but was this the federal government putting these charges in these buildings?
Variously. It could be the federal government. It could be a shadow government of some kind, or a New World Order kind of organization that's just shadowy and we don't really know much about. Therefore, you know, they're highly suspicious, aren't they? Or, you know, the most common thing is, I don't know. I don't know who did it, but I do know that the official story is wrong. See, so that's what you call just asking questions, or J-A-Q-ing off. You know, you don't pronounce it that way, but they're just asking questions. You know, I don't know who did it. I'm just asking questions. It's a very slippery way to get out of the fact that you actually don't have a theory. You're just, because it's so much easier to bring up inconsistencies in a theory that already exists than it is to come up with a coherent theory of your own where all of the pieces fit together. And so far, nobody, absolutely nobody has done that.
Eddie, you've talked about and actually made a video about Occam's razor. Tell us what that principle is and how it applies to what we're talking about tonight.
Yeah, it's often described, for example, in the movie Contact. The popular way to describe Occam's razor is that the simplest explanation is most likely the right one. But it's misleading because, you know, the idea of what's simpler is very subjective. So if you want to look at it slightly more rigorously, it's the explanation with the fewest independent conditions and coordinated complications that go into an explanation, the one with the fewest number of those is most likely correct. So, for example, if we're having a big thunderstorm, I know there was some crackling in there. I don't know if there still is.
No, it sounds okay now. Yeah, it sounds okay now, Eddie.
Okay, good. What was I just saying?
We're going to apply Occam's razor to.
Oh yeah. So, for example, in the collapse of the World Trade Center, we have fire, we have structural damage. Those are two things that were directly observed, and the prevailing theory is that the fire and the structural damage combined to cause the collapses. Now, if you want to attach other conditions, that the buildings were rigged for demolition, and that there were all of these people who kept quiet about it before and during and after, and there was some kind of technology to keep the explosions quiet, or there was some use of some exotic accelerant involved so that the explosives didn't have to be quite so loud. Well, each of those things is an independent condition that's necessary in order for the thing to have been demolished. And that's on top of the fire and the damage that's already observed. So that theory is much more complicated, has many more independent conditions. And that doesn't mean that it's not correct, but in order to consider it and give it any due consideration, all of those extra complications have to have evidence backing them up, and the evidence has to be commensurate with their strength. So if it's an extraordinary claim that a 110-story office building was secretly rigged for demolition, well, you need extraordinary evidence to back up that claim, plus all of the other claims. And then maybe we could consider that it's possibly correct. So, you know, in my mind, Occam's razor says that it's vanishingly unlikely that the buildings were rigged up for demolition.
And just so folks know, maybe they haven't heard of this concept before, Occam's razor, this is something that's been around for a long time. This isn't a new idea.
Right.
Yeah, this is, and it's something that's applied to situations like that to try to come up with what would be the most likely answer. And again, it's the one that has the least number of conditions that would require, explain that part again for me, Eddie. You still there?
Yes, I am. It's the fewest number of independent, coordinated things that are necessary in order for the explanation to be true. So, for example, I have a video on my YouTube channel about coming home and finding that your cat's bowl has been moved. One explanation is the cat was just licking the bowl. It was empty, and the cat was licking the bowl, and it got moved across the room. Or you could come up with a competing explanation that somebody broke into the house and moved the bowl. Well, that's a rather extraordinary claim. So do you have evidence that somebody broke into the house? No, then it's probably more likely that the cat just licked the bowl across the room, because it would be a necessary complication of your theory that somebody broke into the house if you think that somebody moved the bowl. And you look for evidence for that, and if there is no evidence, you kind of have to favor the simpler explanation, which is the cat just licked the bowl across the room.
Eddie, we've got about 5 minutes here in this segment, and I want to talk about the idea that is used in many of these conspiracy discussions, that a steel building, as the World Trade Center buildings were, can't collapse from a simple fire, whether it's created by jet fuel or not. And clearly those buildings coming down couldn't have been a result of the planes flying into them. Let's talk about that idea for a sec.
Okay. Well, it's actually kind of simple. There are many, many buildings made of steel that have collapsed in fires before. Low rises, medium rises. The thing that was unique about 9/11 is that 7 World Trade Center in particular, which was not struck by a plane, was the first building over 20 stories to collapse due to a fire. And the National Institute of Standards and Technology that investigated the collapses of all 3 buildings made a statement that it was the first time that a tall steel building, which is a building over 20 stories, had collapsed due to fire, and they think it was primarily due to fire. I think that the conspiracy believers kind of took that and said, well, something that never happened before can't possibly happen. You know, this is one of those intellectual dishonest intellectually dishonest things that they do. They kind of use this fallacy that if something hasn't happened before, it can't possibly happen. Well, it has happened before. There have been lots of steel buildings that have collapsed due to fire. It's just that this was the tallest, you know, it set a record. And so it was just a record for the steel building collapsing due to fire. And in fact, since 9/11, there have been two buildings over 20 stories, steel buildings that have collapsed due to fire alone. So they can't say that anymore.
When we saw those buildings come down, I believe, and my memory should be a little bit better, but it was the second building hit that went down first, right?
That's correct. Yes, yeah. The South Tower.
So what was the combination of things occurring in those buildings, the World Trade Center towers, that made them ultimately collapse?
Well, if you look at the videos, you'll see that they were hit at different levels. The North Tower was hit, I think, around the 90th floor, 86. I'm sorry, I'm not as well versed on the Twin Towers as I am on 7, because that's where my obsession lies. But the South Tower was hit lower. I think it was around the 80th floor. So there was more mass above it, bearing down on the section that was both damaged and where all the fire was happening. So the engineers believe that it was the greater mass that caused the South Tower to come down much faster than the North Tower, which burned for, I think it was over an hour. But the South Tower is much less than that.
We're talking with Eddie Curran. We're having a conversation about the World Trade Center towers and 7 World Trade Center and their collapse as a result of the 9/11 terrorist attacks. We're going to continue that conversation in just a few moments after the top of the hour break. And I also mentioned that Eddie and I have a bit of a history that is kind of unique. And I'm going to talk about that as well when we come back from the break. And we will take your phone calls at 844-687-7669. I know this is a rather emotional topic for some people. So let's keep it respectful, but we'd love to hear your side of the story. Remember, we've got some great shows coming up later in the week. Tomorrow night, Rich Newman, who is an author, will be joining us to talk about his books. He's got many of them as they relate to ghost hunting, including Ghost Hunter's Field Guide, Ghost Hunting for Beginners, and Ghosts of the Civil War, always a great topic. And then Thursday, Carissa Hartley will be here. She is a psychic medium, and we'll be talking about what it's like to be in that line of work and have those sensitivities. And I'm not sure if we're taking calls or for readings during that program or not, but Slick will tell us later. So once again, the number is 844-687-7669. We will be taking your calls as we continue this discussion. It's Beyond Reality Radio. I'm JV. We've got a lot more of this program to go, so don't go away. Looking for our guest's book? Go to Amazon.com/shop/JVJTaps. It's Beyond Reality Radio. I'm JV Johnson. Thanks for being with me here tonight. Thank you to all the radio stations carrying this program around the country. It is because of them that we can actually be here. Also, thank you to everybody who listens to this as a download after the fact. I know people pull it down as a podcast after we edit it and put it up the next day. Some people go to YouTube and watch it as well on my YouTube channel. That's a fun way to do it in addition to watching it live there, because there's a live video feed as well. But anyway, we have a great show underway tonight. We're talking with Eddie Curran. We're taking your phone calls about the World Trade Center buildings and their collapse after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. The phone number is 844-687-7669. Now, Eddie and I have a bit of an interesting history. I hinted at this earlier in the program, and I said I would talk about it as we entered the second hour of the show, and I want to do that now. And Eddie, you and I grew up basically in the same town. We went to school together. We went to a private school that was run by the local SUNY, which was State University of New York College. It was considered a teaching college. And the school was called Bugby School, and it was a school that was run by the university. And there was a lot of experimental education methods being used in that school. And we both went there, and you and I were, I would say, pretty much inseparable through those years at Bugby, through fourth grade. We were together all of the time. And we talked about a lot of these things back then as well. And then Bugby School ended up closing down after fourth grade. And you and I lived in different parts of the community, so we ended up going to different public schools. And we basically, over time, lost touch. Then, fast forward, how many years? Oh, gosh, it had to be 25 years later, maybe?
Yeah, well, at least 20. It was in the 90s, I know.
Yeah, it was probably 93 or 94, maybe 95, somewhere in there. I happened to be reading a copy of Bass Player magazine because, as most folks who listen to this program know, I'm a musician. I play bass, and I was in the magazine business at that time. I had left radio for a while. I started a company that was representing publishers to be their ad sales force, and I'm looking at Bass Player magazine, and as somebody who sells ads always does, they look at the masthead to see who works at the magazine and who's handling the advertising. And I happen to see a name there that I recognized, and it's a unique spelling of that name, and I thought, could this be the same guy I went to elementary school with? He was my best friend. And we just lost touch. Could it be the same guy? So I sent an email to you, Eddie. And sure enough, you were the same Eddie that I went to elementary school with. And great. I thought, wow, this is pretty amazing. We were best friends through fourth grade. And then here we are both in the magazine business. And not just the magazine business, but we're both bass players, which was kind of cool. And it turns out you were living, I think, in San Francisco area at the time. And you were going to be visiting the East, and we got together and we hung out. And during that hangout, we found out not only were we both musicians, bass players, enjoyed reading Bass Players or Bass Player magazine, and you wrote for it and edited it, but we loved the Beatles and we loved Jesus Christ Superstar was our favorite show. All these things started ticking off that we had in common. And then fast forward another, let's see, we're looking at another 20 years. Maybe 25,
yeah.
Right? And now we're on the same radio show talking about the same topic. It's pretty cool. We talk about these type of synergies and on this program in different forms, and I just find it to be a fascinating story, Eddie, that our lives seem to intersect and have so many parallels throughout the course of the time that you and I lost touch with each other in fourth grade.
Yeah, you know, there was just the CNN movie, Three Identical Strangers, about triplets that were separated at birth, and then they met each other when they were 19. They found each other at a college. It was a big news story, and, you know, they had all these similarities. Well, you and I are like that, except it's nurture instead of nature. It seems like, you know, those years that we had together growing up, we ended up converging later on, not because of genetics, but who knows? It's a very strange thing.
It's fascinating. It's exciting and it's fun. And I will mention this as well, because I know that frequently in the chat room, I talk about Beatles music and we have a lot of music lovers that enjoy the bumper music we choose on the program. You've done a whole bunch of videos that are really fantastic. You present kind of a breakdown of some of the Beatles music and other things. Tell us, just give us a few seconds about what those things are about.
Yeah. For some reason, ever since I started being a musician, I've enjoyed redoing songs that already exist and trying to make it sound exactly like the original.
Right.
It's completely pointless, but it turns out today, you know, there's this whole tribute band thing, and I was in a Cars tribute band for 5 years. I noticed you played a Cars song there.
Mm-hmm.
When I got a YouTube channel, I decided to try doing these things on video. So what I do is I videotape each performance, and then I make a video at the end of the various performances in different boxes. And they're oftentimes from kind of the musician's perspective, so they're semi-instructional. You can see what was going on the fingerboard, what I was doing with the drums, and so, yeah, I've done a few Beatles things. I'm currently doing an entire Pink Floyd album, which I'm getting close to finishing. So it's a lot of work. It's completely pointless, but it's super fun, and I love it.
Now, we've been talking about a lot of different videos here. We've talked about those music videos. We're talking about these World Trade Center videos that debunk many of the conspiracy claims. We haven't given the YouTube channel out. So what is the YouTube channel if people want to check it out?
My YouTube name is Edward Current. I think that would be youtube.com/user/EdwardCurrent. I think that's how it works. Or you can just type Edward Current in and you'll find my channel there. But, yeah, a whole bunch of different comedy videos, some politics. I did a whole thing about creationism, or a series of satires, almost 100 videos on that. And that was before I got into the 9/11 thing. The 9/11 thing kind of took my attention away from the creationism thing, but there's some interesting crossover there in terms of how people believe what they want to believe.
Now, to be in the spirit of full disclosure here, you're not a physicist. You explore a lot of these ideas from a scientific perspective, but you wouldn't consider yourself a physicist, correct?
Absolutely. No, I never claim to have any expertise. The thing that I'm doing is just reporting what the peer-reviewed engineering says. So, I'm more of a reporter in that way and a video maker. I don't do any original research. I don't pull things out of my behind and try to back them up. There are a couple ideas that may be, a little bit original, but, I always say this is my idea, even if I'm speculating something. But the explanations for how those buildings collapsed is a matter of public record, and it's peer-reviewed engineering. And I'm basically just, explaining what the experts have already explained to other experts.
Let's talk about 7 World Trade Center, because that's the one that got you interested in this, and that's the one you've spent a great deal of time exploring. What has people so bothered by this particular building collapse?
Well, the thing that you hear most often is that it wasn't hit by a plane. The two airliners hit the North Tower and the South Tower. They both collapsed. And then the North Tower was, I think, 120 yards away from this other 47-story building, 7 World Trade Center. And it got pelted with a bunch of debris, and some of it was burning, and it lit a bunch of fires in 7 World Trade Center. Well, it also destroyed the water main that was feeding the sprinkler system on the lower floors. And the firemen had already lost a bunch of their guys. They were looking for survivors. And they just decided not to fight the fire in 7 World Trade Center. And they just didn't have the resources. And it was already heavily damaged. The south face of it had a big scoop taken out of it. The southwest corner was kind of carved out for about 10 floors. And they just let it burn. And they predicted that it was going to collapse. This was not a secret. They cleared the perimeter, and they just stood back, and they waited for it to collapse. And at 5:20 in the evening, it came down. And the way it came almost straight down. You could only see the top half of it because of the building obstruction. So you didn't see kind of the ending of when it collapsed, when it kind of just fell apart. But you just saw the top of this building come kind of straight down, and it looked like the end of the movie Casino. So I think that lit a lot of people's imaginations like, that has got to be a demolition. And I do not believe that it was anything but a demolition. And they kind of go from there.
And as you said, Dan Rather even made the comment, and it was as it was happening, and the world was watching it. But you've done one of your videos actually goes into a lot of detail as to how it could happen, look like it looked, which some people interpret as a demolition, but actually wasn't. And can you explain some of the science behind that?
Yeah, sure. Since the 60s, any tall steel building, and when I say steel, I mean that the main vertical supports are steel only. There's no concrete reinforcing. There may be concrete floor slabs, but in a steel building, all of the weight is borne up by steel members. And it's a very popular way to build buildings. It's quick, and it's fairly inexpensive. And in the 60s, they started getting away from these kind of rigid box-like structures where the beams are all evenly spaced. And they started to spread out the vertical columns to the exterior and move a bunch of the columns to the interiors so that you'd have all of this open floor space. And the Twin Towers are a perfect example of this. It's a very strong perimeter system, and there's a core system, and then the floors are completely open. And it turns out that that was kind of a liability in the case of the Twin Towers. Because, well, I won't get into the explanation of that. But in the case of 7 World Trade Center, it's called a moment frame. It's a moment-resisting frame. That's the exoskeleton of the building. And the columns and the beams that form the exoskeleton are very rigidly tied together to resist lateral forces such as wind. And when the thing came down, that frame was so strong that it actually held together in one piece. And so it looks a lot like these old videos of concrete buildings coming straight down, where it just holds together and it doesn't fall apart like you might expect a fire-induced collapse to do. It just comes kind of straight down. And I think it kind of tricks the eye a little bit. It looks, I mean, it is an extraordinary sight to see a building do this, if it was in fact fire. But, you know, we think it was just fire.
And so what you're saying here is the interior began collapsing first. The interior fell apart, and then the exterior came down as it did.
That is how the engineering explanation goes, and there is some visual evidence that supports that. You can see that the roof, some of the roof structures caving in about 8 seconds before the roof line starts to come down, and you can see some daylight through the windows. And pretty much every expert who's looked at this concludes that the core came down first. Even some demolition type supporters who believe that the core was taken out first before the exoskeleton came down, but yes, by the end it was just the exoskeleton collapsing, and it came down very fast.
Eddie, we've got just a couple minutes here in this particular segment, but you created a video to kind of prove a point that it doesn't take much to get people to believe what would be considered some nonsense. Tell us what you did.
Yeah, that was in 2011, right around the 10th anniversary of 9/11. I wondered what it would be like to create a fake video of 7 World Trade Center collapsing as if it were shot from the other side, the side that you never see. See, there's about 10 or so videos of the thing collapsing, but they're all from the north, or the northeast, or the northwest, because the south side, you know, was destroyed. It was the World Trade Center destruction. There were no cameras on that side. So I thought, well, can we put together a video that looks like maybe it was shot from the south side that shows the explosions actually going off and the thing coming down? And then I thought, let's make it a little bit more ridiculous just to see, you know, who catches on to things. So I sped up the thing. I made it fall way too fast. I added a flying saucer actually taking off from the sky. And then I just kind of put it online, and I sat back. And you know, there was about 12 hours of frenzy of people thinking that they'd found the smoking gun until some cooler heads prevailed and said, this is a hoax, guys. And they were right. It was a hoax.
You put a flying saucer in there, which is really subtle, and you have to really look for it. And you also put a coded message, didn't you?
Yeah, it didn't really come out because of YouTube's codec, their compression. You couldn't really see it. But, yeah, if you zoomed and enhanced on the right side of one frame, I think it said, it's a hoax nut job.
And people were talking about it, and you include some of those clips in your video about how people were believing it and got excited. It's Beyond Reality Radio. I'm JV, our guest tonight, Eddie Kern. We were talking about a hoax video, Eddie, that you put up about the world 7 World Trade Center collapse. And in the video, you put what looks to be like little detonations, little explosions. And one of the things that I found funny when I watched the video and you talking about it was that the program you used to create those effects, which is an Adobe program, the instructional video, I think, had something to do with one of the people that was actually saying that this video was legitimate, right? Wasn't there some connection there?
I'm not sure I follow you.
You were talking about one of the people who you showed a clip of commenting on your hoax video, saying it was a legitimate video, was actually somebody that you... I'm trying to remember it correctly, but didn't you watch a video of his showing you how to use After Effects, Adobe After Effects?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, there was some connection.
I know that one of the three, the guy says classic demolition science, and he's talking about the sequence of slashes. Is that what you're thinking of?
I'm not sure. I just know there was a connection to one of the people who was saying the video was legitimate was actually somebody who should have had enough information to say it wasn't. And you had pointed to one of his other videos. Again, I'm not. Maybe it was just that he was an After Effects guy. And he should have been able to recognize what you had done.
Yeah, no. I think I know what you're talking about, but I don't remember.
Okay.
I haven't watched that one in a long time.
Yeah. What is it about people that just continue to ignore the science of this? I mean, when you break this down into basic physics, it starts to make sense the way it should. But the folks that want to argue the other side will just stop before they cross that line.
Well, they have their own science. There's a friend of mine, a former colleague, who, you know, I worked at bass player and he worked at guitar player. Very intelligent guy, very, very sharp. But I found out that he's a demolition believer, and especially with regard to 7 World Trade Center. I don't know how I found this out, but he says that the physics is on his side, and I think he's one of the things he said is, I don't make up the laws of nature, I just enforce them. So one of the things that they claim is that it's physically impossible for the building to have experienced a free fall acceleration as it did through a distance of about 90 feet without all of the columns being taken out from underneath artificially. They had to have been blasted away, these people claim, in order for the building to have this free fall acceleration for a period of 2.25 seconds. But it's just not true. You don't need anything blasted away. It's just how it happened.
What does this work continue for you? Are you continuing to investigate this stuff?
Yeah, in fact, I would like. It seems a little crazy, you know, because I am kind of obsessed, and it's such a small number of people who talk about this online. You know, in the grand scheme of things, when you compare it to something like politics, or even flat Earth, which is very popular for some reason,
yeah.
It's a very small subset. But you know, it's something that I do know about. And I was thinking of doing a video explaining this free fall business. I mean, there's quite a bit of science to how something can actually experience free fall, even though there is a bit of resistance underneath it. And I've done some experiments. I'd like to get into some simulation programs where I can actually build, you know, a 47-story box and see how it would behave under certain conditions. So, yeah, I would definitely say that the work is continuing.
We were talking about Occam's razor earlier in our discussion, and again, to simplify, the definition of that is that the simplest explanation is usually the correct explanation. And you actually, I believe, in your video, you kind of tick through many of the things that would have to have happened, including, you know, a bunch of people that would have had to plant explosives, and those people would have had to keep their mouth shut for all this time.
All this time, yeah.
And you go through all those things. And as I was reading through that and watching that video, I couldn't help make the same connections to some of the JFK conspiracies. Have you done that exercise?
You know, I don't know all that much about the JFK thing. It was, but you know, it was before the internet. It was almost before television. People couldn't communicate and share information the way they did. They would have to buy a book at the bookstore or the library, you know, if they wanted an alternate version of the account of what happened that day.
I watched the, you know, your kind of a bullet list, and again, the thing that stuck out to me, and this was always been one of my biggest difficulties with accepting some of these JFK explanations, is that so many people would have had to have been involved. At some point, somebody, it seems, for the money or something, would have stepped forward and said, yeah, I was there. This is actually what happened.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many things that could have happened. Anybody who wanted to blow the whistle is guaranteed a $10 million book deal.
Yeah.
They could have been coerced. They could have told a girlfriend while they were drunk, you know, to brag to somebody. Or they could be blackmailed. These days they could be hacked, you know, the Russians could have compromise. You know, there's so many things that could get people to talk, and yet nobody's talked. And you got to kind of wonder why that is. Although, I must say, somebody on a comment on one of my videos had a very interesting idea, which was maybe they just had a meeting of all of the conspirators on the 97th floor of the World Trade Center on September 11th. And that did away with everybody who was involved. I'm sorry, that's kind of a tasteless.
It's a little tasteless, but boy, it sure does lend itself to those conspiracy theorists or believers. As you look at this, I mean, are there other conspiracies that are starting to attract your attention? You said you've got kind of an obsession with this particular one at the moment, but are other things kind of entering your radar that you might tackle as well and take a look at?
Well, you know, I'm, of course, interested in the climate change thing and also the anti-vaccination thing. Quite frankly, those are more complex than 9/11 and then the physics of 9/11. I think that's a very clean and easy to understand thing about what was happening to these buildings. When you start getting into climate studies and vaccination studies, I mean, I will completely agree that, you know, the scientific consensus is on the one side in both of those cases. But quite frankly, it's a little complex and it's sticky, and I don't know if I would want to get into debating those things because it doesn't have the very clean, almost mathematical physics that the building collapses have.
Now, of course, the answer to the part of this question will be your videos. But the question is, if somebody is new to this idea and they want to see both sides of this discussion, your side presents the scientific perspective that supports basically the what we would consider the official account of events. Do you have a recommendation for something that might be presented in at least a decent enough format that it's worth watching that presents the other argument?
Yeah, there was a BBC documentary, I think it was called The Third Tower. You could look for that on YouTube, and it's an hour long, and it's quite well balanced. You know, it certainly doesn't start off by saying some of these beliefs are ridiculous, but it has some very good interviews. For example, it interviews Daniel Nigro, who is the FDNY fire chief on 9/11, and he explains why it couldn't be a conspiracy. He would have to be in on it. And they talked to some demolition professionals, and they talked to a BBC reporter who unfortunately announced that World Trade Center 7 had fallen before it actually had fallen, which is, you know, one of those red flags that people often raise, like, how did the BBC know that the building was going to collapse? Well, as I said earlier in this program, the fire department knew that it was coming down, and they cleared a perimeter. So somehow the word got out that the building was going to collapse, and then Reuters picked up, for some reason, the idea that it had collapsed, and the BBC picked up the Reuters thing, and then it's just one of those mistakes that was made on an extremely chaotic day. I might point out that CNN announced that the Washington Mall was on fire that day, and, you know,
right.
That never happened. So
right.
These things, you know, there's crazy misinformation that happens, but it's not evidence of anything.
I'm assuming based on the things we've talked about tonight, and we haven't kind of veered into any of these other discussions, but there are a lot of people that also believe that, yeah, okay, so the buildings came down as a result of those two planes, however, and the fires that ensued as a result. However, there's still a government conspiracy. Why, you know, how did these terrorists, how were they able to accomplish this? It's too complex for 19 guys, you know, that are just running around the country, and, you know, and the CIA is involved and the president's involved. I mean, there's all sorts of theories that don't even take into the account the argument we've been talking about tonight. Have you addressed or looked into any of those?
Yeah, you know, people very often will say, you know, they'll bring up things about NORAD and stand downs and insurance purchases and stock buys and Quite frankly, I'm not interested in all of that human intrigue. You know, the thing that interests me as somebody who's a science enthusiast and a physics enthusiast is just the science and the physics of it. And either it came down due to fire and structural damage alone, or something helped it. You know, it's a yes or no question. They both can't be true. So there has to be an answer. And when you complicate it with all of this other human intrigue, it just, you know, what is the point? It's like, you know, if the police find a dead body, they want to know, how did the person die? You know, and then if they find out that he was shot, then they might ask, you know, who could have benefited from the guy dying or whatever. But the first thing they want to know is the physical evidence and the mechanisms involved. And that's really what interests me, because, you know, if it collapsed due to fire and structural damage, then the other stuff is irrelevant. So, you know, I'd rather talk about the fire and the structural damage.
Changing topics a little bit, you wrote a book called The Simplest Case Scenario, How the Universe May Be Very Different from What We Think. I don't know anything about this book, but the title itself sounds a lot like something we would discuss on this program. What's the book about?
I think we should have another talk.
This would be appropriate, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's way too much to talk about in the remainder of our time, but... it's something I spent a great deal looking into, and that actually is more of a original research kind of thing, but I won a physics award for an essay that the book is based on. So, it would be interesting to talk about it.
Yeah,
sometime.
All right, well, we'll have to have you back to talk about that. We've got just a couple minutes left, and I want to bring up one other thing. I was telling the story of how you and I have quite a history. And when you ended up coming out east to visit, and we saw each other for the first time in however many years that was, over 20, you had just completed filming on the TV show, game show Jeopardy. You were a contestant.
That's right.
Yeah, you were a contestant. And it hadn't aired yet, but it was filmed, so you couldn't tell me the results.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Tell us about the experience, though. That's pretty cool.
That was the greatest experience of my life. I won two games and I lost one, so I was on three times, and I won $42,400, and that was before they doubled the dollar amounts. So it was there were actually two really good wins and then one horrible catastrophic loss. Fantastic experience. I actually studied for it for a year and a half. And then I came up with a method for how you can actually study for Jeopardy, and I put that online. That was 1996, before anybody was doing that kind of thing. And it kind of took off, and I think most people now who are trying to prepare for Jeopardy would know about the little article that I wrote. And might even recognize my name.
Did you was the experience the same as what we see if we're just a casual viewer? I mean, do we see what's going on, or is there more to it?
Yeah, basically, you see what's going on. Like people say, "What was Alex like?" And I tell them, the only time I ever talk to Alex is what you see on television. As soon as they go to commercial, he walks away. At the end of the show, he comes over and talks to the contestant, but as soon as it's done, he walks away, and it's not like we're hanging out and partying with Alex.
He doesn't look like he's much of a partier anyway, I have to say.
That's right.
Pretty serious guy. Okay, so once again, give your YouTube channel. I know you have a Facebook page as well. Anything else you want people to be able to check out?
Yeah, sure. YouTube, I'm Edward Current. Edward Current, just spelled like it sounds. And that's actually a play. You know, Eddie Current is a physics term. And that's what I came up with as my musician name when I was taking physics in college. But on YouTube, it's Edward Current. And also Twitter, twitter.com/EdwardCurrent. I actually found that Twitter is a much better place to make jokes than YouTube, because you can do it in 10 seconds as opposed to 4 hours.
All right. Well, as we discussed, we're going to have you back on. We'll talk about your book and probably other things as well. So, but thanks for being here tonight, Eddie. It was a great conversation. Very, very interesting.
Sure,
appreciate it.
I love talking to you, JV.
Edward Current is his YouTube channel. A lot of really neat stuff there. If you like music, particularly, I know many in our chat room do, especially Beatles stuff. You'll find that stuff to be very, very interesting. I know I did. Tomorrow night on the program, Rich Newman will be here to talk about his books that include Ghost Hunter's Field Guide, Ghost Hunting for Beginners, and Ghosts of the Civil War. Then Thursday night, Carissa Hartley, who is a psychic medium, will be here. I'm not sure if we're taking calls for readings. We'd have to get that cleared up with Slick here. But either way, it should be a good program. Don't forget to stop by my Facebook page. Give it a like. Follow what I'm doing. It's JV Johnson on Facebook. Or you can find me at JVJ Paranormal there as well. If you haven't subscribed to my YouTube channel, I would appreciate you doing that as well. YouTube.com/C/JV Johnson. A lot of great stuff there. Hope everybody's surviving this never-ending cold and winter. And if you're in a warmer part of the country, I'm jealous. That's going to do it for tonight. It's Beyond Reality Radio again. And join us for tomorrow night. Another great show. It's all ahead this week on Beyond Reality Radio.
Beyond Reality Paranormal is hosted by J.V. Johnson and produced by Orion Palmer and Slick Eddie Edwards. Like us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Please consider supporting the program either through your podcast platform, click on the link in the description, or on Patreon at Joha Productions. If you'd like to be a guest on Beyond Reality Paranormal or you have a recommendation for a guest, contact our producer, Slick Eddie Edwards. Eddie is spelled with a Y at slickeddieedwards@gmail.com.